Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the First Film Club. I'm Natalie Louise.
And I'm Hannah Flint.
And this is a podcast series dedicated to established and emerging talent from the film industry and the first feature that launched their careers. We started the First Film Club back in 2018 as a Q&A event series. We've been able to hear from some of the most celebrated directors as they reflect on their feature film debuts in cinemas across London. Now Hannah and I are excited to expand the format to include talent both in front of and behind the camera. Each episode is dedicated to a film, a guest, and their behind-the-scenes stories, memories, and advice from their time on set. Hannah will set the scene.
Actress and producer Hester Ruoff has been working in the entertainment business for over a decade. You might know her as Debbie, the paramedic, in the long-running British soap opera EastEnders, before her producing career really kicked off with short films in 2018. It was around this time she starred in Villain, the directorial debut of Philip Barantini, which cemented their working relationship. Barantini was in the market for producing partners to turn his acclaimed short film Boiling Point into a feature. And Hester knew she needed to be involved.
Around the corner, give me 2 seconds. All right, tap. It's a fucking joke, isn't it?
There's a million kids out there who would die for this fucking opportunity that you've been given.
Andy.
Hello, mate.
Namaste, chef. Okay. Namaste. Good to see you, mate.
Yeah, nice to see you.
This is the critic, Sarah Saffer, as you know.
Hello, love.
Hi.
Well, he's brought that fucking shade of thingy with him. The food critic.
Mate.
It's good to go.
What's this all about?
This is about you taking 200,000 fucking pounds off me.
Sorry.
200,000.
Ring like you're the waiter,
I am sick of your fuck-ups being blamed on us. I do not fucking like you.
You've got to make the right decision and make it right now.
Andy, this is your fucking fault, my man. You don't do the prep. You don't give a fuck about us. You fucking come in thinking of food. You're a fucking ass.
You do the right thing. You go under, so do I.
Starring Stephen Graham as a head chef wrangling his team in the kitchen, behind the bar and on the floor on their busiest night of the year, the technical feat and performances of this single-take endeavour has been lauded by critics at the British Independent Film Awards and by the restaurant industry for its honest portrayal of their profession. Here, I talk to Hester about transitioning to producing and what it took to get her first feature, Boiling Point, off the ground.
Hester Ruoff, thank you so much for being on the First Film Club podcast. How are you?
I am very well. I've got my Christmas jumper on. I'm ready to go.
You got the memo?
I got the memo.
Yeah, listeners, we're both wearing Christmas jumpers and we didn't actually plan this, but I suppose it's recording the week before Christmas Day and we're in the festive season. So, yeah, so I suppose this has been a kind of bit of a whirlwind period for you. We're talking about Boiling Point. When I watched this film, I had no expectations. I didn't read anything going into it. And I was just completely like exhilarated by it. It was such an adrenaline rush. And I think you get that with a one shot. You know, Stephen Graham for years has been just like an amazing actor. And I was just so impressed by it. Something that seems quite a simple, like simple concept, one night at a restaurant. But I can imagine there's a lot of logistics going into it. But before we get into that, let's go back to you. This is your first feature film with a producer credit.
Yeah.
But it's not, you have, it's not your first, this isn't your debut film.
No, so it's not. No. So I've been an actor for many, many years. People probably don't know that side of my life so much because I haven't done so many things. I've done bits and pieces, but I've been constantly working for many years. And probably about 8 years ago, I had an opportunity to exec produce something, which gave me a look at what it was like to be on the other side of the camera in a more of a production role. And it was an amazing insight. It was actually, the film had already been made. It was called Convenience. It is called Convenience with Ray Panthaki and Adil Akhtar, who's just won a BIFFA for best.
I love him.
Best actor, which he's amazing. Yeah, and he and Ray worked so well together. So this is a brilliant. If you haven't seen it, it's a British comedy, and it's classic.
2013, 2014.
Yeah, I think they shot it then, but I actually jumped on the end of it. So I helped just in the distribution side of it. And it was a great experience, but it was not producing. I thought that I knew what I was. And I think sometimes a lot of what we do at first is literally flying by the seat of your pants. You do not know unless you just have to. It's like the baptism of fire. You go in, you're like, okay, throw this at me. And so I did that, and it did really rather well. So it won a Welsh BAFTA. And it's a very precious part of the start of my producing kind of journey. And then I went on to start making short films. So I started off with a film called Jerry, which was with Joan Collins, who I'm such a fan of. She's so wonderful.
Yeah.
And she did something for us, which was quite extraordinary. So we gave her a make under. And we took off all the makeup that you normally see. We gave her a full-on grey hair. We worked really closely with her makeup artist to kind of design a look for her. And so she did this film about, it's like a coming-of-age film for a woman in her 80s. And when she actually, her husband dies, and she realised there's so much more to her life, and she starts rediscovering life in her 80s, which is amazing. And my mum's sort of that age, and we just lost our dad, my dad, quite recently. So for her, I sort of see the same thing where she's like, whoa, new lease of life, what's going on? So we did that with Joan, and we had Oliver Ford Davies, Lynn Verrill, and Stephen Grief in that. And that did really well, got a lot of attention because obviously Joan was doing something, had this complete transformation. And I remember she said to me at one point, she's like, Hester, I think this could be my breakthrough role. I was like, I think you've already broken through, Joan. I'd say probably have.
Breakthrough.
Yeah. But really, for people to see her as not just this glamorous person, but someone who can act. She actually, you know, and she was so like up for it. And it was great. It was really great. So that's, yeah. So, and then I went on to do a few more shorts. I was working very closely with a dear friend of mine, Laureline Garcia. She's French producer or line producer. She was my line producer. And so I did most of my shorts I did with her. And well, actually it's quite a crazy thing happened, but we were in pre-production for a short, it was in 2018, was it 2019? Sugar, 2 years ago, yeah. And she had her life taken from her. That's a nice way to say it. She was murdered by her ex-boyfriend, who I knew. And it was just the most horrific thing to have to go through. When you're in pre-production, you are talking to this person like, you know, 10 times a day. You're in just constant communication with them. And we were doing a film called Spanish Pigeon, a short film. And so we'd been talking for ages because there's such a big buildup for every film that you do, even a short. You're in discussions, you talk about crew and cast. And so for me, that was a massive hit. Because I didn't really know. I then had to do it, the rest of it myself, where I'd been kind of relying on somebody there. You can't do everything by yourself. You would
know.
You could, but it's good to have good people around you, and you need to build your team as a producer and find people that you trust and you can rely on and you know will you don't have to chase to do things, but they'll just get on and do it if you need them to do it, whatever. And Laurelin and I were extremely close. And so that knocked me for six. I didn't really know how quite to move forward or if I wanted to. But then there's this other side of me where Jerry was doing so well, the short, and Laurelin and I had been on that journey together. And then we did another, I did another one called The Snatcher. And I just thought, who on earth could I find to replace her? I couldn't see where that was going to ever come from, because she was the most giving person with contacts. And and she and I trust each other explicitly. There was nothing between us where we, you know, sometimes the industry is difficult and you don't always trust people because they are not always what they say they are. Yeah. And you know, there's maybe some kind of hidden agenda somewhere or whatever. But with Laurelin, there just wasn't. There wasn't. And it was beautiful. And so I then had this real strength and commitment to doing it for her, in a sense, and knowing that she would have been like, oh, come on, Hester, sort yourself out. She just wouldn't. She was brilliant. So now everything I do, I just think, you know, thank you to her for really being there at the start of my producing career and being such a ledge. But then the other person that's really mentored me through a lot of my producing, or certainly early days of my producing, was Ray Pavlaki, who was incredible. Like, incredible. And just really, when I had difficult, I was like, what do I do with this? He was like, hey, you know, ask me questions. You know, if you need help with stuff, just shout me and I'll advise you. You can do the work yourself. I'm not helping you. So I think, so having really good people, solid people around me to just guide me, mentor me, was incredible.
Well, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I'm so glad that you kind of got through that, because grief is no easy thing, especially when you're doing sort of a job where it's creativity, where you have to have your mind on it. It's tough. And I'm sure she'd be very proud of what you've got on to do. I'm interested as well, like you said, you did acting, you have acted, you continue doing that. What was the transition period where you realized, like, maybe I want to do producing? Because also the director of this, Philip Barantini, he was also an actor as well. And so I'm interested in that, kind of like, what made you want to move that way?
Yeah, I mean, if you speak to Phil, he would say that his acting days are done. He doesn't want to do it. He just doesn't he doesn't feel that. Although he was just in my last feature. We did cast him in that, which is called A Violent Man, which is actually coming out in February. So A Violent Man with Craig Fairbrass and Stephen Odebola from Blue Story, who I love.
Yeah.
I love them both. And Jason Fleming and Zoe Tapper.
And or Jason Fleming.
Or Thompson. Oh, me too. Jason is brilliant. He's so good. Brilliant. Yeah. He's like a best mate. You just want to have him around all the time. So Phil was in that. We gave him a part in that. But for me, it is a really, they're so different. And that's the thing. Like, I get so excited when actually there's elements of both. I think I just live on adrenaline, which is crazy. So when you're in production or pre-production or working towards something, there's so much adrenaline and excitement that I feel about producing something. I'm like, come on. And I love a challenge. And so if someone says, oh, you know, it'd be great to get that actor, I'm like, right, bring it on. I'm on it. And I love working with the people that I get to work with. And it's just a joy every day. But acting, I recently did a show at the Criterion Theatre, which in fact, it was a couple of weeks ago. And it was just one night. And I was asked to do it. It was an incredible piece. And it was raising awareness for the amount of abuse and the levels of abuse, which have just increased so much in the last couple of years or so, certainly with coronavirus and the lockdowns and everything. And this was raising money for charities and surrounding that. And I've done a few things recently. I did something for Women's Aid. And I think it's really, to be on stage with a group of women, we had the cast, we had Saffron Burrows, Lauren Haynes helped put it together, and Sadie Frost, Sharon Duncan Brewster, Victoria Smurfit, just this wonderful group of women. And you're thinking, why have you asked me? Are you mad? That imposter syndrome creeps in.
Oh God, that imposter syndrome, just get out of my face.
It's awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so rubbish. You're like, go away. Who are you today? Get lost.
Who invited you to this party?
So, but yeah, I got to do that. And that was a wonderful experience. Great to be back on stage. I haven't done stage in about 8 years or something. So I was like, help. but it was magical. And so far I've never put myself in any of the films I've produced. I didn't want to. People say, why don't you just put yourself in that? I'm like, because I think it's important, or has been important for me, to establish myself to the industry as a producer and not have people think, because I'm sure it is out there way. Well, you know, it's a vanity project. She's written it, directed it, produced it, and now she's starring in it. You know, I didn't want to do that because I think to be a good producer for myself anyway, to date, I've wanted to fully focus on everything. And I just did a film up in Oxford, a feature called Surprise by Oxford. Well, working title, Surprise by Oxford, which is based on a book. And we produced it, Bart and myself produced it for the UK sort of section of it. And it's an American film. And they just hired us to produce it for them. And, you know, you work constantly, all hours of the day. There's no boundaries. I mean, you can put boundaries in if you want. But for me, I'm like, I sleep when it's done. I sleep when the job is done. I will work my butt off to make sure that every single I has been dotted, T has been crossed, and there's nothing left unturned. Because then I think, you know, that establishes you as, this girl's not afraid of her work. She's going to work and see the fruits of it, hopefully. And I just want to make sure that everyone is set up to win. So if I can work the hardest I could possibly do and set everyone else in the cast and crew up to win, then I've done my job. And hopefully that will get it sold.
Well, let's talk about Boiling Point then. It was originally a short and got adapted into a feature. So I suppose at what point did you get involved? Were you at short level? Were you just brought on for feature?
Well, Art Rispoli, who's my producing partner, my now producing partner, because I did find somebody awesome.
Yes.
I've known him for a long time, and I've known Phil Berrettini, who I actually hired to direct Spanish Pigeon. So he came on before he even did Villain, which was his first feature alongside Bart again. And I acted in Villain. So I play DCI Higgins in Villain, which is on Netflix at the moment, doing really, really well, which is great. I think it was Critics' Choice in the New York Times or something, which was fantastic as well. So I've known those boys for quite a long time. And when I worked with Phil on Spanish Pigeon, we realized we were on a very similar sort of career trajectory. And I can never say that word, trajectory. It sounds like, you know.
It's a hard one.
Trajectory. And
it also stops being a word if you say it too much. Like, wait.
I know.
You're like, what is this I'm saying?
Yeah. I say that. I look at a word too long. I'm like.
Yeah. I had this brief period where I looked at Kings of Leon. I was like, Kings of Leon? I was like, what does that even mean? Like, is that there's a weird thing. There's an actual specific term for when you kind of like words lose their meaning.
I remember doing that with the word welcome for ages. Welcome. What a strange word. I don't know. I'm clearly very like you. My brain is like goes up in all directions. but yeah, so anyway, I love Phil very much and Bart as well. And they are good guys. And we were all on a similar journey, I think. And Bart was, you know, much further ahead than I was in producing. And the short film came about through Phil, really, was his brainchild. And Bart produced it for him. And it was a wonderful film, a short film. And what an amazing proof of concept to have to then go on and make the feature film. And so, goodness, I have to say, I have never felt more grateful for being asked to bring my skills to the table for the feature of Boiling Point. To go out and find money, and, you know, I love a challenge. So give me a challenge and I'll do it. But it was like, yes, please, I'd love to go out and find money for you. I'd love to jump on and produce it. And I was just so excited to be a part of it because I love working with the boys. And as I say, Phil and I have got a very good dialogue, Bart and I have a very good dialogue. And I just had, I think when you believe in something, like I believed in Boiling Point, nothing can stop you. Mm. It was a real passion project. It wasn't made for a load of money. The boys had done the short, obviously, before, and that had done really well with James Cummings. But this was a beast before us. It wasn't as just as easy as the short. It was something like, heck, the crew and the cast are going to be massive. There's going to be a lot of them. And it needs to really be thought through very, very, very carefully. And so they asked me to get involved probably around, so we shot it in the March, just before lockdown of 2020. And I think I came on with starting my conversations about October before, something like that. So that's when I joined the feature project.
So you mentioned there, so there's, I suppose the roles that you're playing there is both financial, getting that. And it'd be interesting to know a little bit how that works out, because I'm always like, I had to get the money. It's like, but how do you get this money? And also, I suppose it'd be good to talk about the creative side, because obviously you said you're wrangling cast members and, you know, working with the casting director, you got the Biffa Award for casting on this film, and it is so amazing. So let's talk about the financing thing. How do you do that, especially kind of the confidence to do that? Because asking people for money is a very awkward thing.
Yeah. And I actually think there is no answer to this question. And people ask me it all the time, obviously, because they want to know who my contacts are. It's not even that. It's like, there is no answer. You can clearly tell that I've got the gift of the gab. So I don't mind. I can chat to anyone. I'll go on the tube and start chatting to people. I love chatting to people. So
one of those charity tins. Come play. Yeah. Come some... We're making Boiler Point.
That would take a while. But yeah, so I would... look, again, it comes down to how much you believe in your project, because I think... And you have to be... You know... You can't just be like, oh, this is going to be amazing, guys, jump on. You have to know that your project is going to get their money back, because one of the things that annoys me the most about filmmakers is who they basically blag a financier, and it ruins it for everyone else. they say, it's going to be this, going to get so excited. And they know full well it's probably not going to get the money back. You've got to get the elements into the movie that's going to get people's money back. And trust... it's all about trust. So they have to trust you with large amounts of money. And there are some people who will go make the film and then be like, oh, okay, I've got my pay now. I've made the movie. It's blah, blah, blah. And then be like, right, what are we doing next? But for me, I want any investor to know that I am utterly integral and I will work my butt off to get their money back. And I won't stop until, you know, that money is back in its, and hopefully with the raise that they can achieve on the film. Mm. And in that front, you know, in that sense, Villain has done extremely well and Boiling Point. So hopefully you begin to get a track record and they say, okay, well, look, the last two films made money back, which is amazing. So what's next? I know that I can trust this person because they're just from track record, really. Well, that helps. Obviously.
Yeah,
but otherwise, just I'm not going to ask for so much that, you know, if someone has got, I don't know, they've got it's also got to benefit them. So yeah. I also say, well, look, don't put money in unless it's going to benefit you. If you can then go on and say, and if it helps you to kickstart your career as producer, where you've, you know, put money in as an exec, or you've done whatever you've done, or how is it going to benefit you? Because if they think that you're just in it for your own gain, I wouldn't put money in for that. I'd be like, latest, mate. So I think that's my approach to it, really, and just talking to people.
I interviewed M. Night Shyamalan, and I really quite enjoy his way of making movies now, since no one would give him money anymore. But one of the things he said, because he mortgaged his house for the visit, and ever since he's always invested his own money in it. Which works out well because you're getting all your own money back. But one of the things he said was very clear was only ask for as much money as you need to make the project. And I wonder, like, what were the kind of conversations to working out this specific amount that you really needed?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really important that you do your budgeting way in advance, you're scheduling your budget and do it together. Like Bart's very good at doing that. And he loves the stuff that I hate, which is great. I love all the creative and the go out and get cast and go out and do, have all the conversations. He's like, I'll take the maths. I'm like, you can take the maths. So yeah, it's really important to really carefully think through it, because it's not fair. I think it's not fair on people who are putting money into something where there's no chance of getting back. Just do. And then also you want to give them every opportunity to get an uplift on their money. So do it for really what you can do it for. And you'd be surprised. People will, they buy into things that if you're passionate about. So with Boiling Point, it wasn't done for very much money. And
can you tell us the budget?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, around the 600 mark, wow. All said and told. I think it was just under that.
That's tiny.
It is. And people think, oh, it must be over a mil. It must be this. It must be that. No, it wasn't. So, you know, and we all took incredibly small fees. Like if you think I've been working on that for a long time now, my fee was basically non-existent. So, and I'm great. I'm fine with that because I don't need to be paid big. I'm not about money anyway, personally, as a person. I shouldn't really say that, but it's important to get paid, obviously. But about film, passionate about making film and yeah, getting it out there for the world to see. And with Boiling Point, such an important message. It's the time for people to be really putting a magnifying glass on that industry and saying, hey, you know, there's issues here. Let's do something about it. And Boiling Point hopefully will really highlight a lot of that and start the conversation.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
So let's talk about what you do love, the creative part of it. You know, you mentioned wrangling actors. So tell me a bit about that process, because, yeah, the cast is amazing, as you said. BIFFA award-winning cast, casting director as well, Karen McDonough. So, yeah, tell me how that went down.
Well, we used some of the same actors who were in the short film, put them into sort of different roles. And then I'm friends with Malachi Kirby and Ray Panthaki. So I bent their arms. Actually, you know what? I didn't have to bend very far. But it's funny because both of those boys are leading men.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, do you want to do a film where you're not the leading man, but you're just a really small part, but it's going to be the best thing you've ever done? And they were like, yeah, okay. And then, you know, a lot of the other casts we'd worked with before or we brought in from different films. And so we started off with this great group of people. And then Carolyn has just got a wonderful skill of finding new faces. And so we worked with her and actually Phil's agency, who he's with as an actor, core management, they were great, had some young actors that they brought as well, which I'd used in one of my short films before as well. So it was this kind of mixing pot of people who we'd all worked with or loved. And Jason Fleming came through. Stephen, in fact, Stephen had some, he'd just been doing the North Water before. And so he brought a lot of the guys that he worked with on that into the film too. And he'd been working with Vanette Robinson on something. So he brought her in. And then with Carolyn, she just found these absolute gems. And we spent a long time looking. So Bart, myself, Phil, we sat and watched every single tape without fail that Carolyn sent us, and Matt as well, Matt Shepherd, who she worked with as well at the time. And we didn't miss a single one. We watched every single one. And that was very important to us, because as actors, and Bart was an actor as well, if you think, well, someone's only gone and watched the first 20 seconds of my tape and not bother with the rest, and I've learned it and put all this effort into it and thought process, and then that's not really fair on the actor. So we were like, fine, because you know what, sometimes the first part of the tape might not go so well, the second part would be amazing, and you want to give them a chance, so you give them a recall.
I love that you're like, I know this, I've done this dance, I'm gonna make sure. Yeah. I don't, you know, I think that's really lovely. I think, yeah, you know, that's what they always say, actors, you become filmmakers. Often, you know, they're more empathetic and know how to work with, yes, their cast better because they've been there.
Yeah, and it's a daunting thing. And to do a film like this was quite daunting because, and the other thing is, we had so many people that wanted to do it. I mean, to get to do a one-shot film with Stephen Graham, why would you ever say no?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, what an opportunity. What an opportunity. And that was what we had initially. That was all we had attached originally. And we hadn't quite kind of worked out who was doing what otherwise, but yeah. And then I was in every single one of the casting sessions, the recalls, and had a very big, you know, I was very much involved in that, because I think I, as you say, as an actor, you can empathize, and I think that helps, and as a team as well. So everything we did was very much like we were just in sync together, which was great. And an honor.
So you shot this at a real restaurant. How did you go about picking that and securing it?
Well, that's a very good question. So Andy Jones, the real Andy Jones, is a real person, but it's not based on his life.
I'm going to say, he's not out the back.
No, yeah, absolutely, no. And he's great. He's a good friend to all of us. And he's known Phil for many years, and Bart and the guys. And so he just sort of, I think, had a chat and was like, hey, I have a restaurant in Dalston. You guys want to use it? And we literally took over, took over the whole place. And we had to build fake walls, and we had to change the entrance because it didn't quite work for what we needed with the camera. And a lot of logistics going into that. We had to hide people in different places around the restaurant. Like the sound guy, we had to pretty much not brick him in, but build him into a wall, one of them. I had another one hiding in the men's, you know, urinals. it was great. But the restaurant was, so we literally camped out there for a long time, and then we worked out the whole process of the choreography around the restaurant and how it would work, and would we be able to fill the restaurant with the essays, and did we need to make it smaller, or how it could work, and also even the kitchen, because the kitchen's not huge there, but it's got an open kitchen. So it's got half around the back and then half at the front, which was nice actually, because then you could have the actors out the front rather than all just being in the kitchen, which the short film is. The short film, they're all in the kitchen.
So that's the drama great as well, when they're kind of like, yeah, your mouth. Customers, yeah, exactly, are gonna hear you.
Yes, exactly. And what you don't see is the wonderful thing where, you know, whilst the camera is suddenly out the back or in another part of the restaurant, all the actors are like, oh my goodness, where are we at now? Where are we at now? What's coming back? When the camera coming back? Camera's coming back. And then they've got to go straight, you know, straight back into doing what they were doing and pretend that they were doing the whole time. And Vanette, the wonderful Vanette, who's also just won her BIFFA for leading or supporting actress, which we're all extremely proud of her for. She had what she would call a Bible, and she had it in the fridge. She literally kept it in the fridge, her Bible. And the moment the camera disappeared, she would get it out, and all the actors would like flood around her. Where, what's next? Because it was all quite similar.
Yeah.
You know, when you're cooking and it's, you've got to know exactly which bit you're at, because you can't go wrong. You cannot go wrong. So the restaurant worked very well, and we've still got a very good relationship with Andy, called Jones and Sons. And so we actually used Jones and Sons. We used the branding. We were like, hey, why not?
And now I hope they've got a lot of footfall.
Absolutely. And I think they'll have a lot more when the film's released in January. So hopefully COVID won't get in the way of that. But
oh,
yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Fingers crossed. You know, I suppose just even that then, did you, because it is very theatrical. I mean, and I love a Gwan shot. I find it just so, you can't take a breath. And it's so funny because as much as they were thinking that behind the scenes, like I was watching, I was like, oh God. And I'm like looking around and you're just waiting and you just have this like thrum of tension that kind of maintains, and it's very kinetic. And I suppose just how much rehearsals did you have to do? And logistically as well, you know, what were the conversations as well? Not just with cinematographer, but also, as you said, like production designer, cables on the floor, like, you know, health and safety. You don't want someone ending up tripping up in the middle of the best take. And how many takes was it in the end?
This is it. And actually, I think people just think it was probably quite easy because it was just one take, done, out the door, see you later, go home. There was so much to think about. It was tough. You had to do everything pretty much in advance. Like all the preparation had to be spot on, ready to go, because we have one chance of doing it. So initially we were going to have, we're going to shoot it over four nights, twice a night. So we sort of, I think the first take was around about six, I think I'm right in saying about 6 o'clock. For 90 minutes, then we had a break, dinner, whatever, and then do another take after that. It didn't work out that way at all. So that was the great plan. So we meant to do it 8 times. However, we had the weekend. We had only a week rehearsal with Stephen, and we didn't even have a week. I think we had about 4.5 days with Stephen and Hannah, his wife, who's brilliant and wonderful in the film. And so only a week really with the whole cast. And I think only probably a couple of days of that with most of the crew being there ready to work it all through. So you had to do a couple of the scenes. So Phil worked with the actors doing the smaller scenes in the couple of weeks running up to that. So those scenes were rehearsed and then put it all together as one big theatrical performance, as you called it, sort of called it. And it was like that. It was like a play because you drop something, you pick it up. If you, it's not like, oh, it's right, because we'll go again on that take. No, you don't. So you're just very much more in it, breathing it, living it. And that's why it's so real. And the other thing that was really, and one of my things that I did was, it was really important for us to make sure that the actors and characters were really in it, really living it, and really connected to each other. So in advance of coming to set, I arranged for all of the actors to meet up within their specific groups. So I had even the two I shouldn't say it if you haven't watched the film, but there's a couple of paramedics that appear. You know, they met up
drama.
Drama.
It was an eventful night at Jones and Sons.
Yeah, it was. There's a lot happening. And so I introduced them to my friend Catherine, who's a paramedic. And so they got to chat to her as a female, what's it like being a paramedic? And then they met up, so they had a bond and knew how each other worked and became, you know, and then we had the family in the back room. They met up beforehand and they had WhatsApp groups going. There's a group of American girls who they had a WhatsApp group going, and they became really good friends. And that's amazing. So if you've then got, and even the two barmen who'd never met before, two actors, George and Taz, Skylar, they met up and had conversation. And so then they're like, and so that was so important. So what you see is real. There's that element of like, gosh, it feels like a real running restaurant. It's because everybody's had the experience of each other. And
exactly. That's exactly. It was so naturalistic, just to the point where you forget that they're actors. It just feels just like there's a comfortability and a shorthand and just even like the looks and the kind of So much of it is so subtle. It's the nuances and the subtleties of it that you just think these guys have known each other for years. And even just the elements of why they're there, like, one girl's an actress. She's just come from, again, there's a flirty relationship with the bartender because there's always that sort of, it's just, it's just, I was just blown by how much I thought I was watching a documentary.
Yes. And you know what? And all of those things were very considered, and you wouldn't think maybe that they were, but for us making the film, in even in the auditions, a lot of what they found in the auditions, we then put into the film. So James and Phil were like, well, that really worked. And we were all in there. We're like, yeah, that was great. So that ended up parts of what they might have, you know, lines, even a line in, and even though the script, they had beats, the story beats all needed to be hit, the words were the actor's own. You know, it's probably why there's a lot of swearing in it. Sorry for...
Hey, Andy.
Hello, mate.
Namaste, chef. Namaste. Good to see you, mate.
Nice to see you.
Hello. Critic, Sarah Southworth, as you know.
Hello, Sarah.
All right, really nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you.
Can I have a quick glass of wine? I should really get back to the kitchen with snow under there, you know what I mean?
Just have
let them do their thing. You have a glass of wine, right?
Okay.
It's gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Happy Christmas.
Cheers.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
Such a buzz in this place. It's great.
No, it's, you know, it's busy.
I'm busy. We're super busy with the TV stuff and everything. It's gone mental. But, I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, the show's rocketing.
Yeah, I saw one episode.
Not the only one that saw one episode. There's 7 million people watch it, so, you know, full series. Must be doing something right.
Yeah, no.
This menu is I recognise all of this stuff. I mean, this is all my dishes. I mean, I love the way it's on a bit of paper, but there's the duck with the soy.
Yeah, that was my dish.
So what you're saying then, so with the script-wise, and it was, I mean, you have massive rehearsals, you know exactly where it's going to go, but there was room for, like, them coming up with their own dialogue, how they'd react to the situation.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't scripted to the exact words.
Wow.
So it was, they had to follow the story. So the story was, you know, that you've got to, otherwise you'd be all over the gaff and it wouldn't work. But so there were very specific story beats to hit, and through the rehearsal process and then bringing their own thoughts and what would this character say in this moment? You know, that argument, that's why it was so real, because they were improvising around what they were given as the story beats. So we had a script that sort of changed in size. So they might say something in rehearsal that was like, that was good. Let's get that down. Let's write that down as a line. But if it's without, you know, it's not like a play with a long period of time to rehearse something and then get it exact. It's so spontaneous because those actors do not know what's going to happen in that take. If it's, it needs to be driven the right way, but they might well say different things. And that's why it's so real, because they're just listening. We couldn't get actors who couldn't do that. So even in the audition process, the first thing that they were asked to do was send a self-tape with themselves, literally just making a cup of tea and telling a story. And you'd be surprised, and Phil will say this, you'd be surprised how many people can't do that. And they try and script it. And you're like, no, just stop. Don't think so much. Don't be so considered. Just say whatever, just tell me a story. And so you would watch it and be like, this person cannot do it. They're never going to be in the moment. If Stephen came in and threw something on the floor, but that wasn't quite how it fell earlier.
Yeah.
And now you've gone and spilt, you know, hot oil on me or whatever. Well, you've got to react to that. You can't be like, oh, wait, that wasn't how I did it a minute ago. Mm. So I can't, that's suddenly thrown me. So you had to get actors who were really spontaneous and able to cope with anything thrown at them. So even in the auditions, we put them through their paces in the recalls. And Robbie O'Neill, one of our actors who was in it, he came and he played Stephen's role in the auditions and threw stuff at them, like, just to see how they'd cope with it. And the people you see are the ones that were fantastic in their auditions.
Mm. Yeah. It's just, sensational. I'd love to know, though, which was the You said, which take did you end up going with?
That's a very good question as well. I meant to say that earlier. So we didn't end up getting our 8 takes. We had 2 after the weekend. Everyone was so rusty. And I'd love to tell you it was great, but it was awful. they needed the Monday night to just go, wait a minute, what did I do on Friday again? Understandably, we'd all be the same. So they were cranking slowly into gear on Monday night. So we did 1 take that was pretty much a rehearsal. And then the second one of the evening, actually the card, there was a fault in the card or when they were, so the camera actually stopped working. So obviously that was a no-go. So Tuesday we came in. Now, bearing in mind, COVID was cranking into full gear. And every single day, Bart and I were receiving messages and updates of all around of films being shut down left, right and center. We had to cast one actress 3 times, one role 3 times, 3 different actresses. We lost key camera team, DIT. We lost loads of SAs just started walking out because they were like freaking out because you just didn't know what kind of a beast you were dealing with COVID. And we had, our stills photographer, he was isolating up the road. So I was like running around trying to get food up to this person who had COVID and stuck in an Airbnb with the other 2 people that he was also on set with, leaving care packages over there and doing this like while this is all going on. So we got to a point where we were like, I don't think we can go any further. How do we go beyond Tuesday knowing that by Wednesday we may have lost our DOP? It was that serious. We were losing so many people. And there were so many of us in a very small area working as this huge ensemble. One break in that chain and you're in trouble. Or one in really, serious break. If Stephen got it, we could probably replace a lot of people.
Just not Stephen.
and blag it somehow, right? So, I was there with my, I'm ready to step in anytime, guys. But not Stephen's role.
oh my God. So then it was that final one.
We told Phil Monday night. We didn't tell the actors that it was their last day. Stephen knew, Hannah knew, Bart and I, we made that decision Monday night. We're like, tomorrow is our last day. Now, you therefore have 2 takes. The first 2 Monday, done, not, you can't use. We had 2 takes to get this film in and we should have had 6 more. And we got it in the next one. We got it in the 3rd take. So basically the first true take that we did. And I think it came down to, so the 3rd one or the first of the Tuesday night was the best performance wise. And the one after that was probably better technically, had less issues with the camera, et cetera, et cetera. But performance is always going to come first because that's what you guys are watching and that's what draws you into a film. So, and even then, Matt Lewis, who was only 23 at the time, our DOP, even then, he, on the one that wasn't as good for him, this shows how good he is, he won a BIFFA for cinematographer.
23, oh my.
Legend. He's amazing. Wow. His career is going to... Yeah, he's absolutely incredible. Yeah. And we had special camera design for him and he was, he just took it in a stride. It was actually, I think it was his idea originally to do it in the 1 take. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about it. Once you finished a film, then it's the film festivals, right? And then kind of working at distributors and then obviously going on to awards. But what was that process? Once you've done it, you kind of lock the edit, sound, all that type of stuff, how do you go forward in that to get people interested and get buzz?
Well, the wonderful thing about Boiling Point, there's no edit.
Yeah, true. Bit of sound mixing. So,
we went straight into lockdown after that. So you've gone from being around 200 odd people into being by yourself. You're like, what the heck is going on? Which is very difficult. And so we did everything remotely. We did all of, the grading remotely, the sound edit remotely. We opted for music. We did a very kind of subtle but clever soundtrack with David Ridley and Aaron May, who worked on Villain as well, where the music is actually underneath the whole time. composed as though it's restaurant music, and there are times where it's increased and dropped, very subtle, very kind of thought through. But all of that was done remotely in lockdown. So that was mad. And then I had a friend who linked me to Charades, who ended up being our sales agent. So they introduced me, and then Bart and I went to see them, and they were like, yeah, you know, this, and they actually came on board before we shot it. And they were like, this sounds great. And a lot of people couldn't get their heads around if this would be something that would ever work. They were like, I don't know if it's going to be any good. And that was for us as the producers to persuade people that it was. And thank God.
Some people have never watched 24 Hours in A&E.
Absolutely. I love that show. Maybe that's our next one.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I feel like this is a type of concept that has scope to be expanded because, you know, it's interesting. We've seen a few chef things, but they've always been, I suppose there was that one that was called Chef with Bradley Cooper, who incidentally was in a TV series based on Anthony Bourdain's life. And he played the Anthony Bourdain character. He was like, I need to get my film. He loves a chef role. And then there's that chef that Jon Favreau did as the food truck thing. And I remember there was one with Aaron Eckhart called No Reservations with Catherine Zeta-Jones. I clearly enjoy this. And then obviously Ratatouille.
I was going to say Ratatouille.
The most famous one. But I do feel like this is a concept that even just the way this is shot and the characters and what I love about it is that I wanted to know the backstory of each person. Like I know it was on Stephen, but I was so interested in every other character. And that's what the power of this film is. It's like, you just want to know more. You want it from the pastry chefs, from the Sloan, what's she called, the MC or the maitre d' kind of character. It's like just so much about it. So what I mean, I don't understand how people didn't get it.
That's so great that you say that, because that is what we needed to do outside of the world of our restaurant. And that's why it was so important for them to have met up and created those backstories and really thought through their characters. It can't be get your lines, turn up and do it, you know, bring yourself, element of yourself to it. There was way, way more to this. So that you peel off the first few layers and there's way more underneath. You've got to for something like this, because otherwise there's not enough in it. Watch this space is all I can say.
Exciting things
in the pipeline.
I like the sound of that. So was it London Film Festival? Was there another festival you got into first? And like what was the kind of reaction where it was like, oh my God, 100% you're in? Because I've heard
Do you know what? It took a while sometimes.
Sometimes people do film festival stuff where they've had things where they've submitted a film, like really edgy directors, and they've said, no, you need to go back. I know there's one particular Canadian filmmaker whose film at Toronto Film Festival got sent back and had to resubmit it, and it got in, but it was not very good.
Wow. Well, this
I
is
won't
it.
Name names.
I had a lot of meetings in advance of making it, a lot of meetings, and people are like, what's the point of making a feature? You've made the short, be done with that, be happy with that. And you're like, because I think there's more to this. And actually a feature is going to reach a much wider audience. And it was, again, as I said before, you know, this is very much to do with mental health. We're working with a couple of mental health charities, Pilot Light and Hospitality Action, because of its importance. So I think with festivals, we initially, there was interesting though, we were like, oh, I don't know, it's a bit slow on the uptake, we thought, until we were offered for our world premiere to go to Colo Viveri, which is a great, you know, great, great place for a premiere. I got COVID the day before, so I ended up not being able to go. I was like, you're kidding me. But amazingly, I know, I couldn't believe it. The only reason I did a PCR test was because I'm flying. I mean, it was nuts.
Well, luckily you did.
Yes, I know, right?
Super spreader, Hester Ruoff.
Yeah, the whole film industry goes down. So the guys went out there, and from that, they started pouring in. So we've been all over the place. We went, you know, to Zurich Film Festival and Dinard and I have to remember where they all are. Mill Valley. We've got one coming up in Mumbai, and
a decent amount.
China, and yeah,
that's amazing.
Cork Film Festival, obviously the London Film Festival, which was our British UK premiere.
Was it a bidding war for distribution?
We've sold it worldwide. Yeah, we're still selling. It's great. So it's remarkable. I feel so grateful every day. I'm like, wow, this was my debut. This is crazy.
And you got nominated.
I mean, yeah.
It must be such a, just, I suppose, I mean, you know, I thought sometimes awards can feel like, they can make you feel like losers if you don't get nominated. And obviously it doesn't reflect the work that you do, whether you win or you do. And obviously if you do it, because there's so many great people doing it. But for you, just because of the journey you've been on, to then suddenly have that, what did that do for you? Did it kind of instill you with a lot of confidence of sense that, you know, you've mentioned earlier imposter syndrome. I mean, getting nominated for that, surely that would have quelled that voice in your head.
You'd be surprised. I'm one of these people where, I know I sort of touched on it earlier, but I get such joy from seeing other people flourish in their gifting. Like that, then I go, well, why are you giving me a nomination for this? Because it's an easy job for me when I get to watch people who never, you know, there are some people who, this is like one of their first jobs as an actor, and you get to see them. For me, it's very important to create an atmosphere on set, and I will do it on every set I ever walk onto, where someone's done it for me, where they've trusted me with what I can bring. So I need to create an atmosphere, a safe, supportive environment where someone can cut their teeth without feeling like, oh, I don't know if I'm, you know, confident enough to do it, or where they can just flourish and know that if something goes wrong, it's all right, because I'm there, I've got their back. and I'll you know, keep pushing people forward. And I get such joy out of things like that, I go really, you're gonna give it, you know, you're nominating me. But it's such a, you know, it's everyone, surely this is for everyone. And
well, you did get 11 nominations, so pretty much everyone was covered.
That's true. Yeah. It was a huge honour.
Well, congratulations, because it is such a wonderful, and it felt really visceral and new, and something, an area that hadn't been tapped before in I suppose this specific way. And, you know, as you said, there's so many people part of the team, but for you, that to be your debut, congratulations on that.
Thank
I suppose
you.
What's your kind Thank of you. What's the lasting takeaway that you kind of doing this as your first film that you'll be now taking into your next?
Well, you could never ask for your first film to done so extraordinarily well. Yeah, so I just think, I mean, I wouldn't do anything differently. I would do the same again and again and again. I would do everything the same. I would just, as I've just said, make sure that the film that we're putting out there has a message, is, and obviously I think genre is important and entertainment is important, but it's also, we've got such a responsibility as filmmakers, and as a female, it's not easy. It's really not easy. And I'd be lying if I said it was. I battle, there's things I have to battle, even with people I work with, like really closely. And you just think, are you serious? Mm. You know, are you undermining me again, or are you doing this again? Boring.
Is it like, are you undermining me because I'm a woman, or are you just undermining me because you're a dick?
Yeah. but as a filmmaker, and the more sort of, I guess, people will look towards Bart and myself in what we're doing next, and we have such a responsibility for, you know, the next generation of filmmakers and actors. I've been doing this, you know, a long time, even though I'm so ridiculously young. but we have to carve a way where people go, it's all right to do that, and it's all right to make mistakes, and it's all right to, because, you know, just come as you are, and let's do this together, let's forge a way together. And I think, I really think that it's time to see that, like, the narrative of dog eat dog, shark infested, you know, creative waters change. I don't see why it has to be like that. I understand, obviously, there's an element of competition, and that's fine, that's healthy. But so I think anything I do, I want people to know that my production company, that I'm passionate about helping, you know, the next generation, passionate about seeing diversity absolutely represented. And I think finding a film or finding stories that really leave you questioning and asking more. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Hester Ruoff. Welcome to the First Film Club.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Hester Ruoff, producer of Boiling Point, released in cinemas and on digital platforms by Vertigo Releasing on January 7th, and available to watch now. Next time on the First Film Club, we're joined by director Michael Lehman, who will take us back to the 1980s with his debut feature, Heathers. Thank you for listening to the First Film Club podcast. Please like, subscribe, share, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @first_filmclub to keep up with the show and hear about our latest film screening events. This is a Stripped Media podcast series written, produced, and hosted by Hannah Flint and Natalie Louise. Edited by Ben Williams, with music composed by The Last Skeptic.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.